There he had beliefs that was similar to theirs, and he lived in a community in which the overall believing determined respectability. The individual who didn't live at least as well as the minister required was just in trouble. People did not want to be ashamed of themselves. They were therefore perhaps a little too tight, we'll admit that. They were a little too much inclined to their orthodoxies. But there was a mutual strength from the fact that the community followed as best it could the golden rule in the Sermon on the Mount. It didn't interpret these things. It didn't have any deep insight or understanding, but it just lived according to the letter of the Scripture. Now, this has all changed. Today, we have very little of the community religious life that was known to our ancestors. We have many new religious movements rising all the time, each one of which exists only because there is a little difference between it and the others. Sometimes that difference is so little you can hardly find it, but it's still there. And people become addicted to these different beliefs as they do to simply diet programs. If you want to really diet, all you have to do is to pick up a half a dozen of our prominent magazines and read the appropriate ads, and you will find a number of ways which, if you try them all, will end in premature death. You will find that no two seem to agree what is necessary. All of them are infallible. All of them are harmless, and nearly all of them are impossible. So the person has a whole series of nutritional recommendations. How he should eat, what he should eat, what support he needs, all about the vitamins and the minerals. He is given a long and elaborate description of all the things necessary to his physical health. On the psychological level, we have religions, philosophies, groups, ethical centers, political differentiations, social orders, every type of subject from the protection of the ecology to the preservation of local farmhouses. All of this is part of a system. And this is where the psychological phase of our life control comes in. These various groups have gradually usurped our religious allegiances. Our religion today is very sketchy, and in many churches, if you go, you'll find most of the sermons devoted to political or social problems. The old idea of religion for its own sake has disappeared, and religious buildings, churches, no longer resemble places of God. They look very much more like banks or other public buildings. The old way of simple devotion has vanished. On the physical plane, that simple devotion was 3 square meals a day, cooked at home, from pure ingredients. Psychologically, the preservation was simple faith, simple believing, and hard work. All these together made the individual industrious, self-respecting, and tired when night came. Most of our ancestors couldn't stay awake late enough to listen to the average television performance. We were prevented. We must have now the skill to prevent it ourselves. But as a result of these psychological recommendations, our mental and emotional health can also get into serious complications. We are given all kinds of remedies. We are given everything you can think of, very much in the spirit of the pharmacology of medicine. Very often, a doctor will try to treat a mental or emotional ailment with physical drugs. Perhaps it's all he knows about the subject. Very few physicians are even good nutritionists. But today we are trying to use the psychological teachings, which may be allergic to us. They may not be what we need at all. In order to find out what we need, sometimes it is necessary to gradually find out what we do not need. most of the old Chinese and Hindu and Egyptian philosophers felt that the beginning of the good life was to get down to basics. And basics in this case would be a complete study of ourselves. What are we, really? As old Reynold Blight, who was the second preacher of the Church of the People that I later inherited, Blight said that every individual should say to himself or ask himself, what am I worth if I lose everything I have? Now, this is a big question. Most people would feel a little unhappy about it, I suspect. But actually, possessions have a very little effect upon the ennobling of character. In fact, the more wealth we have, the more apt we are to become dissipated or indifferent to the real values of living. So each person must, for general practice, find out the basics of his own nature. He must find out what is underneath all the fluff and frills of acquired external pressures and environmental contributions. What is the person inside? Has he an integration which will enable him to handle wealth? A person without internal integrities will always abuse what he has. And the world is full of wealth without responsibility, without integrity, or without enlightened understanding of right use. So if we're going to find out how to build a successful life and get over the pressures that distort it, we have to also learn to filter out false teachings, unreasonable attitudes, and mistaken educational policies. The problem of getting children through school is becoming more and more difficult, not altogether because children are becoming impossible, but because the children are not given anything that is of value. They know before they get out of school that they are just as ignorant of value as when they went in. That they have been able to take 10 or 12 years of education and graduate without the slightest understanding of why honesty is important. Something is wrong. We are being fed the wrong diet, psychologically. And because of that, we are producing individuals burdened throughout their lives with various mental and emotional allergies which should have been corrected at home or certainly brought in line in the higher phases of education. It is just simply lack of realization of self-value. Many people really believe that we are just a piece of putty and that anybody and everybody can shape it according to their way in which it should be. We have no sense of an identity which is capable of transcending pressure. We have no realization that within us is something that is capable of amounting to something. And for lack of that, we have no incentives. Also, the industrial economic world in which we find ourselves is not inspiring in any sense of the word. The individual has very little opportunity to develop or express personal integrities. He is gradually molded into a product. His value relies entirely in a certain skill or in a certain ability, and the rest of his life is meaningless. This was pretty bad when there was a strong home life. Since that has failed, there is nothing left to bring the person into a maturity of inner thinking and feeling. So, what can we do? We have to gradually stand away from all of the situation and do that which we know inside we ought to do. And we have to face the problem of supporting in every way that we can, really supporting, that which we know will help, instead of being willing to drift along in the present pattern of things. The modern world problem is actually a composite psychic allergy. We have dumped indigestible elements into the social structure for ages, and it is sick. It is very seriously ill. And if life consisted of this social project alone, we would be doomed. But this social project is simply a sickness brought on which cannot destroy the life in us, but can make it very difficult to endure. The actual life within us, the kernel of eternity that is locked within our own natures, is immortal. Nothing can destroy it. Nations can come and go. Empires can rise and fall. Even the most horrible nuclear war cannot destroy the eternal, inevitable divine spark in any living thing. We can destroy the bodies of things. We can destroy the bodies of insects, but we cannot destroy the life in them. But we throw this life out of the body, which it would naturally inhabit, and turn the world into a graveyard of shells, the spirits of which have been forced out of manifestation. We do not need to worry about being destroyed. What we need to worry about is being delayed, of being variously conditioned against the reasons for life. We cannot be prevented from that eternal growth, but nature, if it's necessary, may destroy an environment which man himself is no longer the skill to control. Unless we do it, nature will do it. And nature does not play favorites. Nature rewards only virtue. Nature provides security only to that which deserves it. Therefore, we all of us must become more and more deserving. And in order to do that, we must become more and more involved in values. If we are not able, by virtue of background or of present condition, of making some major gift or contribution to life, then we serve God perhaps by releasing the God in ourselves most adequately and most immediately. This is a job we can all face. We cannot change the course of history, but we can change the course of personal biography, and it's about time to give this a great deal of serious thought. Now, when we look over the problem of ourselves, we may get to be a little discouraged. We realize we've come a long way along the path of time without accomplishing very much. Also, that if the truth were known, when it comes to making a decision, we're simply bewildered. We're not at all sure what we ought to believe. We're not sure how we ought to live our lives. We're not sure how much we should spoil other people or should allow other people to spoil us. We don't know whether we are kind to our children by not punishing them or cruel to them if we give them a thrashing once in a while. We really do not know what to do. I have people come to me all the time and ask me what church they ought to go to. They don't know. Also, they would like very much to know the best reducing diet, and I'm an expert on that. But, in other words, there's always questioning. People do not solve their own problems. They feel they're not able to do it. Well, if there is some simple general problem that you face, even one out of a dozen or more that you know are there, take one and go to work and educate yourself toward a solution. If there's something you want to do that is worth doing, find out how to do it. And also learn how to do it correctly, realizing that in order to accomplish anything correctly, we've got to roll up our sleeves and do it ourselves. If we will work this way, we will get some action. So if, for instance, you have dissatisfaction with your internal life, if you would like to know more about art or music or philosophy or medicine or any subject, then the thing to do is to so regulate your affairs that you have time to do the things that you want to do, and that the things you want to do are worth doing. The individual who lives their whole life wishing that something could be done usually dies without doing it, as in the famous example of Dickens' character of Wilkins Micawber. Actually, if you want to educate yourself, do so. If you want to learn philosophy, learn it. If you do not have the facility or the ability to do it all by yourself, tie into a pattern that is doing it and learn. Choose what you're going to do. Choose how you want to learn. Set aside the time necessary for self-improvement. And give up a lot of things that improve nothing, but which have become time killers throughout your life. Also, you can find tremendous opportunities for one of the most important service labors in the world, and that is helping. There is nearly always someone we can help, but we have to be awfully careful why we do it. If we want to help in order that we can be appreciated, we have missed everything. If we want to help and then turn around and try to have the other person do us a favor in return because we deserve it, we have lost everything. These ulterior motives, the moment they show up, are psychic allergies. They will destroy a good deed instantly and will reduce the personal satisfaction in your own consciousness of having done something worthwhile. So it is only for the good deed, for its own sake, that we are concerned. A good deed is allowing the God in you to work naturally. The deity in each of us wants to use us as instruments for the manifestation of the divine plan. When we use it this way, then we get away from the egotism, because we suddenly realize that it is not ourselves, but the Father in us that doeth the works. And as soon as we get that way, we give humbly, realizing that the fact that we have done it right is simply the fact that we have been what we ought to be, and that we have given a fair opportunity for the better part of ourselves to be revealed. As soon as we get out of the commercialization of our own conscience, we'll get a long way toward solving the problems of our personal lives. So therefore, always bear in mind that a life is in some sort of way a kind of continuing prayer. The individual is either cursing or praying most of his life. He doesn't realize it and doesn't know it, but everything we do is either in honor of truth or against truth, one or the other. There's very little neutrality, because laziness is against truth. To do nothing is not the answer. But to do something and do it well not only brings proof of dedication, but some way it improves health. There are people who have learned from personal experience that habits, like allergies, become more nagging with the advancement of years. A young person eating all kinds of carbonated drinks and foods and pastries and candies and all these things seems to go along pretty well on them in the early teens or in the late years of childhood. In fact, the peer group prevents any other policy from enduring. But as you get older, if the appetites do not mature and become more reasonable, firstly, you know, the little aches and pains begin to appear, and you go to some dietitian or specialist, and they tell you that your diet isn't doing you any good, that the time has come to think in terms of nutrition rather than simple terms of enjoyment. So you find that it is necessary to change your ways, or else your bad dietetic practices are going to be the finish of you. Now, it's the same is true with the psychic allergies. While we're young, we can make all kinds of mistakes and seem to live through them. We may have poor relationships with life. We come under the influence of persons who are not responsible. And yet, in many instances, we seem to drift along and we're fairly respectable people. Majority of persons are as respectable as their background protects. Actually, however, as we get older, these psychic allergies begin to cut into health. And more we are realizing that physical ailments are mostly the long shadows of psychic debilities. That nearly every physical ailment has a psychological origin. And that gradually this psychological origin so conditions the person's mind that he abuses the body, does what is not wise or right, and then the sickness starts. So with this type of problem, as we quietly take on problems, solve them, and transform pressures into enlightened consequences, the body does enjoy the benefits. A good emotional integration is one of the best foundations for physical health. The moment the person is inwardly disturbed, the physical system rises to meet the disturbance. If it is invaded by bacteria, it rises against that. If it is invaded by psychic errors, it rises against them. The psychology tries to protect us. We are endowed with processes and functions to protect us from ourselves if necessary. But there comes a time in physical problems when adrenaline gives out. There comes a time when our mistakes are so numerous that there is not enough energy left in us to repair the damage, and sickness sets in, becoming probably chronic and ultimately shortening life. In the same way with mental and emotional pressures. If the individual has emotional pressures within reason, nature can take care of them. A person who is bereaved will be given strength through period of grief. An individual who has an unhappy or tragic event in their lives is expected to be a bit of a sufferer. They are bound to feel it for a time. But nature steps in and takes care of it if the person is sound underneath. An individual with a good solid background will rise above almost any emergency that comes along. It is not that they do not have feeling. It is not that they may not grieve. But it is that gradually they will transmute the negative aspects of their own emotions by virtue of the insight which they have. And it is in this that true religion and true philosophy become a tremendous protector of the physical life of the individual. If, however, the person simply decides to settle back and wallow in grief for the rest of their lives, they can do so, but they're going to pay for it. Exaggerated grief is an evidence of poor philosophy and poor religion. It is a proof that the individual is not living from a firm background or base within himself. We all have to suffer occasionally, but there is also constant recuperation taking place both physically and metaphysically, if we give it a chance. If we do not give it a chance, we have to live with the consequences. If we therefore are able to put our psychic integration into proper relationship with life, we will have it much easier and we will be happier and healthier and we'll have greater opportunity and strength to do the things we want to do. One of the problems of allergies is that they reduce stamina. By dietetic allergy, we reduce function and we reduce the enthusiasm of life. The body becomes tired more easily. It becomes disappointed more easily. And the tired person with a physical allergy is more likely to go into some form of neurotic condition. Now, it is also the same way with the psychic allergies. The individual who permits them to take over gradually diminishes his own vitality. He becomes less capable of doing things well. Many individuals under a neurotic pressure lose employment. They lose opportunities for advancement. And a bad dispositional sickness can corrupt practically every aspect of life that is worth living. Many a broken home is nothing but a physical or a psychical allergy in action. It is destroying things which it cannot restore. and this destruction is simply due to lack of integrity and the courage to stand against a mistaken procedure. The moment we find out what is causing a problem, we must go after the cure. One common cause, for example, is a bad memory. Memory can be a wonderful aid. Memory has given us everything that is important in life as far as we are concerned. A person suffering from amnesia has destroyed almost all of the psychological powers of integration with which we are endowed. A memory, however, can be a very dangerous thing. A memory is very dangerous at the moment to when we try to discover who discovered a country and who it belongs to. If we had no memory of the situation, we'd probably be better off. But we now have memories in countries of invasions time after time after time. We see countries that have been overrun 10, 12, 15 times in the course of history. And as a result is, the country's memory is very uncomfortable. It is distorted and possessed with all kinds of antagonisms and with all kinds of misunderstandings. A little reality and a great deal of exaggeration, and the result is chaos. Now, it is the same way with ourselves. Many of us are really suffering acutely from our memories. Memories can be allergic. A man is allergic to his memories. It is quite possible for an individual to pass through an entire lifetime nursing a grievance. It is possible never to be able to get over the antagonism we feel towards a person because of one or two incidents 25 or 35 years ago. I've had people come to me who couldn't get along with a brother or a sister because of some unhappy occurrence. They hadn't spoken for 25 or 30 years. Very often, if you ask the person, now, well, what was the original incident that started all this? I've had them look at me blandly and say, I've forgotten. They don't remember the incident anymore. They don't remember what happened, but they remember they ought to feel bad about it. So memories can be very inconvenient things. Now, there are all kinds of ways of working with a memory. Unfortunately, we cannot forget without forgetting too much. In fact, it's only when the memory fails that a lot of our problems start. So we can't get rid of it that way. But what we can do with a memory is make a textbook lesson out of it. We can look over the memory carefully and transmute it from a misery into an opportunity to understand some factor of life that is important to us. We can use a bad memory as a means of releasing ourselves from a bad habit. We can find ways to transmute a difficulty into a constructive experience. At the time, we may not have learned. 30 years later, we haven't learned. But the day we wake up to the facts, we have learned. And it's never too late to start. So that anyone who is carrying negative attitudes toward other people should do everything possible to transform those attitudes into constructive experience factors, to finally impersonally view these incidents and learn to grow from them, until finally maybe we will be grateful to the person we have hated for half a lifetime because we simply didn't learn a lesson. And sometimes, unfortunately, we were to blame in the first place. So it is to learn all of these tricks and truths that help us to learn to use our own faculties against false processes that arise in thinking and in emotion. If we have to wait until we have the perfect diet physically, we probably won't last that long. We're going to go too soon. Because some of the things to which we are allergic really seem to protect us from complete starvation. But in psychical matters, we can rise to the discrimination which will enable us to say, this is good for me, this is not good for me. This I can do without interfering with my own growth. This I can do, which will enable me to help other people. This I can do because my philosophy of life tells me it is best. And another one, this I cannot do because I have done it many times and it has hurt me and endangered me every time. Or this I will not attempt again because it has failed. And something else comes along and we say, well, I was an alcoholic and I tried to defend it and I denied I was an alcoholic. And I came very close to dying as an alcoholic. But because of a quiet, heart-to-heart talk with myself, or because a religion or philosophy came into my life that was stronger than the habit, I have corrected it and I'm going on my way with a clean slate. We can solve every problem if we determine to do so. We can overcome every antagonism if we are willing to live by the simple biblical admonition, do good to those who despitefully use you. Now this sounds awful platitudinous, and a great many moderns consider it ridiculous. But in the sober fact, the Sermon on the Mount is one of the greatest systems of psychotherapy that has ever been given. It is the one that tells us that when we do it right ourselves, and when our dedications are right, heaven is with us. And to have heaven with us is more important than having all the world with us if we do wrong. So that we can gradually get rid of psychic allergies if we will follow the admonitions of not only our own scriptures, but the scriptures of other people throughout the world. They all tell us to love one another. They all tell us to be kind, to be just, to serve each other lovingly and with friendship. They all teach us to rise above selfishness and to place our faith where it is properly placed, in the spirit within us and in the spirit within space. If we face and love God and work with each other, if we follow the way of heaven, if we keep the rules, they will keep us, and we will live long in the land which the Lord our God gave us. But if we keep on being foolish, even if the land endures, we won't. And it's much better for the individual to realize that most of his existence is out of this world, that it is far more important for him to build into the integrity of the universe than it is to satisfy his own ambitions here. If we live right here, we are right forever. If we live wrong here, we will be spanked and sent back to try again. All of which is a little more difficult. The best thing to do is to start immediately to make any correction which will enable us to live better and more constructive lives. I'd like to announce at this time that at 1 o'clock we're going to have a little memorial service here in the auditorium, and we will hope that you will all be here to join us in a tribute to Holly Freeman, who has been a very faithful friend for many years. I would also like to point out that there will be a funeral service for Holly at the Utter McKinley Mortuary Parlors in Glendale at 2 o'clock, and I will also conduct that service. We thank you for being with us this morning and hope to see you at 1 o'clock.